Welcome back, everybody, for another deep dive with us.
It's great to be here.
Today, we're going to be looking at something pretty fascinating. It's the psychology behind mediation.
Okay.
We're going to be looking at how these little tiny subtle shifts in your thinking can lead to some really big changes in how you resolve conflict.
Yeah. Mindset's powerful stuff.
It really is. And I love those moments where you're like, oh, wow, I never thought about it that way.
Uh-huh.
So today we're looking at this blog post called Opening Mindfully, Attorney Methods.
Interesting.
It's all about opening statements in mediation.
No, you wouldn't think that just that first little bit would be so important.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what got me intrigued about it, because the post actually starts off with a quote from Plato that says, the beginning is the most important part of the work.
Hmm, that's interesting. What do you think about that?
Well, I'm kind of curious to get your take on it first. What do you think about that quote?
Well, you know, it's true. I think that opening statement really sets the tone for the whole thing. And it's like a first impression. If you come in and you're already talking about how you're going to win and, you know, you're not really that interested in, you know, what the other side has to say.
Right.
Then it just puts everybody on the defensive. And I think it actually kind of shuts down that part of our brain that's open to problem solving and compromise.
So it's not just about, you know, being nice to be nice.
Yeah.
Actually affects people's neurology.
Yeah. When we come in, you know, really hot and we're focused on proving our point or our case, we're basically just flooding the other person with stress hormones.
Oh, wow.
They're less likely to listen, less likely to empathize, way more likely to dig in their heels.
I never thought about it that way.
Yeah.
So, okay. So let me ask you this then, because the post talks a lot about moving away from these generic robotic opening statements.
Right.
Why is it so important to make it personal?
Well, because it shows that you've taken the time to think about the situation.
Right.
To understand the other person or people's perspective. And when you do that, it just builds trust. And, you know, that's crucial for any successful mediation.
Okay, so let's say you're in a mediation and you're trying to kind of shift the tone away from that adversarial kind of fighting.
Right.
And move to something that's a little more collaborative. And the post talks about these, what it calls mediation mind shifts.
Yeah.
And how, you know, just like a really small change in how you're using language can make a huge difference.
Absolutely.
Can you give me like an example of what that looks like in real life?
Sure. One of the simplest but most powerful shifts, I think, is to stop talking about the other side.
Okay.
And start talking about, you know, different perspectives.
Okay.
It just kind of reinforces the idea that, you know, we're not enemies in a battle.
Right.
But we're just individuals with different viewpoints who are trying to find common ground.
So it's more about moving away from us versus them.
Exactly.
And acknowledging that, you know, everybody's coming to the table with their own valid experiences and perspectives.
Exactly. It's not just about avoiding, you know, inflammatory language, though. It's
yeah.
also about consciously choosing words that foster collaboration.
Okay, so like what?
So instead of, you know, throwing around offers and counteroffers, which can feel kind of transactional and competitive.
Like we're making a deal.
Yeah. We can try to frame things as settlement proposals.
Okay, now this is where I think it gets really interesting, because why does that even matter?
Yeah.
You know, it seems so small.
It might seem small, but it has a big impact, you know, psychologically, because offers and counteroffers create that pressure. Like you're always trying to one up the other person.
Right.
Keeps people in that win-lose mindset. But when you talk about, you know, a settlement proposal,
right.
It implies this shared goal. Like
yeah.
we're really trying to find something that works for everyone.
Right.
It just subtly activates that collaborative part of the brain.
So you're saying that the words we use actually impact how our brains are processing this situation.
Exactly. And this brings us to another fascinating mind shift.
Well, I think we should unpack that one in part two.
Yeah, let's do it.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
All right.
So we're back and we're going to keep diving deeper into these mediation mind shifts.
Yes.
And you were about to tell us another example of how language can really just like subtly shift that whole dynamic.
Yeah, there's this thing, you know, where we always want to talk about our bottom line.
Right.
It comes up all the time in negotiations. But the blog post suggests that we actually try to avoid that phrase altogether.
Now, that one really surprised me.
Yeah?
Why is bottom line such a problem?
Well, because, you know, it's important to be clear about what you need.
Right.
But it's the way we frame it that makes all the difference.
Okay.
When you throw down your bottom line, you're basically creating this psychological barrier.
Oh.
It's like a big sign that says you're not willing to budge. And right. that makes the other person less willing to be flexible, too.
So it's like we're both digging in our heels.
Yeah.
So what's a better way to kind of approach that?
Well, instead of fixating on the bottom line, we can shift the focus to our interests and needs. So, for example, instead of saying, my bottom line is $10,000, you could say something like, it's really important for me to walk away with enough to cover these specific expenses.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So it's like you're inviting the other person to understand why.
Exactly.
You know, behind your position. And then maybe that opens up some more creative solutions.
Exactly. And remember, the goal of these mind shifts is to kind of move away from the problem itself.
Okay.
And focus on finding those potential solutions.
And that kind of takes us back to what we were talking about in the outline, those three types of satisfaction that are so important.
Yes.
You know, for a good mediation to happen.
Absolutely.
We had a, you know, party satisfaction, process satisfaction, and outcome satisfaction.
Yeah, well, connect those dots.
Okay.
So party satisfaction means making sure that each person feels heard and understood.
Right.
And using language that acknowledges their perspective is a big part of that.
So everybody feels valued.
Yeah, exactly.
Like their concerns are being taken seriously.
Right now, process satisfaction is all about how the mediation itself is conducted.
Okay.
So, you know, if one party feels like they're being bullied or pressured, it just erodes that trust.
Makes it harder to find a solution.
Exactly. And that brings us to outcome satisfaction. By focusing on our interests rather than our positions.
Right.
By exploring creative options instead of getting stuck in that win-lose mentality.
Right.
We just increase the chances of reaching an agreement that everyone can live with.
So it's like these little subtle changes in our language and how we're viewing things.
Yeah.
Can have like a ripple effect through that whole process.
Absolutely. It's like we're changing the lens through which we view the conflict, and then all of a sudden new possibilities just emerge.
Yeah, this is something that I find really interesting is, you know, I've been thinking about these mind shifts.
Yeah.
And I feel like when I try to consciously use them, it's not just about resolving conflicts better.
Right.
It actually changes how I communicate, like in all parts of my life.
You know, it's so true.
Tell me more about that.
Yeah. It's like you start practicing these principles, like really listening and choosing your words, carefully focusing on understanding rather than judging.
Right.
And it just creates this more positive and collaborative dynamic in all your relationships.
So it's like it's not just a mediation tactic.
Yeah.
It's like a way of being in the world.
Exactly. And you know, it's fascinating because the blog post goes beyond just the theory. It gives some really practical advice on how to actually apply these mind shifts in real life.
Perfect, because that's exactly what I was going to ask.
Yeah.
Like, okay, how do we take this and make it real?
Well, let's explore that in the final part of our deep dive.
Okay, so we are back, and I am ready to apply some of this stuff.
Me too.
To my own life.
Yeah.
So we've been talking about, you know, these mediation mind shifts and the psychology behind it all and how it can really transform how we deal with conflict.
Right.
But how do we actually make this, you know, something that we do and not just something we know about?
Right. It's one thing to understand the concept, but bridging that gap between theory and action, that's where the magic happens.
Totally. So what kind of practical advice did you find in the post?
Well, the post actually has some really interesting reflection questions in it.
Okay.
That I think can really help us integrate these mind shifts, you know, into our communication patterns.
Okay.
So, for example, one of the questions is, you know, think back to opening statements that you've observed.
Okay.
That were particularly effective and mindful. What made them stand out? What were some of the specific elements that contributed to their success?
Yeah, I like that because it's looking at, you know, stuff that actually happened.
Real world examples.
And we can see what worked.
Exactly. And then it takes it a step further and says, you know, how might I change the content and delivery of my own opening statements in the future?
Right.
To create, you know, more of that positive and collaborative atmosphere. So it's really about taking a step back.
Yeah.
And being honest with ourselves.
Yeah. Like, are we the problem?
Yeah. Are we unintentionally setting a combative tone? Are we using language that's escalating the conflict rather than de-escalating it?
It's so easy to just like fall into these patterns, you know, without even thinking about it.
Oh, absolutely. And there's one more question that I found really powerful, and it asks, you know, how might I change the words in the language that I'm accustomed to using in these types of situations to create, you know, more productive and trust building environment?
Oh, I like that.
So it's really about, you know, becoming more conscious of the language we use.
Right.
Making a deliberate effort to choose words that foster understanding and collaboration.
It's such a simple thing, but it can make a big difference.
It really can. It's like we're reframing the narrative instead of using, you know, language that reinforces division and blame. We're consciously choosing words that promote empathy.
Yeah.
And a shared search for solutions.
I think that's a great place to leave it.
Yeah.
I have really enjoyed this deep dive. I feel like I learned a lot about how to approach conflict differently. And I'm really excited to start trying some of this stuff out in my own life.
Yeah, me too. And remember, it's a journey, not a destination.
That's true.
You know, we got to keep learning, keep practicing, keep refining our approach. Conflict is a natural part of life, but we get to choose how we navigate it.
I love that. And I think that's a perfect takeaway for everybody listening. So as you go out into the world this week, think about a time when, you know, you were involved in a conflict and how shifting your language or your approach might have changed that whole outcome.
Right. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us for another deep dive, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.